Who knows what Jay-Z, J.K. Rowling, Bill Gates and Oprah Winfrey all have in common? Okay, I will tell you then. They have all overcome failure in one shape or form to go on to gain success in their respective careers. Welcome to My Perfect Failure. Join us as we delve into the world of our perfect failures. We will interview, explore, and discuss how our perfect failures can lead us to success. Join us and tune in.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of My Perfect Failure. Today, I'm super excited because I have another amazing guest for you. So, my guest today is the founder and CEO of Career Ecology, a hub spot for work-life empowerment. She's mentored job seekers for over 20 years as the owner of her own search agency. She brings much more than meets the eye. She calls herself a work-life doula. Out of the angst of 2016, she founded Career Ecology in order, as she puts it, to help every human shed the old and awaken the imaginal and fly free. So a very, 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 very warm welcome to My Perfect Failure, Laurie Wallace. How are you?
I am good. It's so nice to be with you here across the pond.
Across the pond. And what's your time zone? What time zone are you in?
I know. First thing in the morning, it's sunny here in San Diego. It is around 10 o'clock in the morning, 10:15.
Okay.
And
okay.
You're at the end of your day, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes. So what time is it now? It's just gone 6 p.m. ish. So this is a nice kind of like segue. This is a beautiful segue into my day. Been looking forward to this. It's the first time that we spoke. Love your energy.
Aww,
love what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I was super delighted when you said yes. Cool, definitely would love to do an episode. So we've kind of had a few emails back and forth, and the energy kind of exists not just through this but via emails as well. So it's been lovely to connect with you today, and excited to share your journey and the wonderful things you're doing with the Career Ecology to the masses. So yeah, so thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you. When you said the word yes just now, it was funny because, you know, I've just picked up from you such integrity and authenticity since the beginning. And of course, we were referred through someone that we deeply respect and admire. Yeah. And so when you just said, thank you for saying yes, there is this, I'm just going to say this and then we'll move forward into your next question. But I just want to say that, you know, there is this yes where we get to open to chance, where we say, you know, yes to this chance collaboration or this introduction or this referral. And I think the collaborative universe, the energy of the universe really loves that word. And when you said it, I really felt it. So
Good. Yeah. That makes me feel better. I should say it more often, but it's, So Nina kindly connected us, and we had a first conversation similar to this.
Yes. Deeply resonant human.
Just lovely energy, lovely flow. Talked about bits and pieces about us, but yeah, so it was lovely to get this positioned in. So Laurie, when I spoke to you, regurgitate what I said before, it was just this lovely energy, and also I've got captured into a little bit of your background, some of the challenges that you've encountered, but how you've been able to maneuver them to become this amazing person. I guess you were an amazing person then, but but that's kind of the reason I put this podcast together, because I think human beings are capable of so much and we deserve so much.
Yeah.
But sometimes life can throw difficult situations at us, and sometimes we may think that maybe we don't deserve the life that we want or we feel, and we can settle for maybe something that isn't quite us.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in California now.
Yes.
But you're not originally from California. So how did you navigate to California?
So, you know, my life, you know, born into Arizona on the hottest day of the year, in the middle of the year, in the middle of the 60s. So I'm a woman of fire, and my parents moved us all around the East Coast, but we landed in California. And I'm so glad. It's just been beautiful living by the ocean. And I headed off to UCLA met my soulmate there, and graduated into a huge recession here in the United States. And so that's what ultimately brought me to the Bay Area. And I was there for 20 years, really through that whole dot-com, you know, explosion and everything, right? So I got a foot firmly planted in, you know, phones, analog, and, you know, pre-phone, pre-computer. I typed all my papers in college. So, you know, I remember what it felt like to be bored. You know, when there wasn't something to quickly fill your mind, you know, with social media or anything else. I came of age at a time when we still wandered a bit, also wasn't quite sure where I was going to go, what I was going to do. But really, as a girl and a woman coming of age within a family structure that really held me into a compliant state of being a good girl who was always happy, who you really didn't speak up too much, complied with the way everything was. I came out of college and married my soulmate and instantly was in the fire. It was not serving me in my relationship or at work with being a compliant person who didn't bring my whole. This is where I started to really experience sort of the miniature failures, you know, of feeling, you know, kind of lost at work, or my relationship just exploding with constant arguments and various things. And I came to learn it's because I wasn't fully whole or showing up and feeling brave enough, you know, to do that. And so authenticity, so critical, big lesson.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think it's very easy for a lot of us to feel that angst, or to feel incomplete, or to feel that I don't really have the platform or the situation to show up as I feel that I want to. And when we do that, we kind of, it's very easy to accept that situation, because we may not have your intuition where you actually challenge it and you think, actually, I need to do something with this. Mm-hmm. So what happened? Did you kind of pick away at it and think, actually, this isn't right, doesn't feel right, I need to kind of delve in to see what's going on?
Absolutely. You know, there were two things going on. You know, one is when you recognize that you've got a fire. If you've got the angst, you know, you're not satisfied. You might be failing also. You might be miserable. You've got a fire in there. And so when people come across my desk or call me and they're working with me through Career Ecology, through the masterclass, or through recruitment, if they have something to say, they're really unhappy or they're really upset or something has happened, maybe they've been laid off and everything's cracking open, I know we have a lot to work with there. And so I felt that way through my 20s and really had to lean into the fire, because I knew I wanted to experience a life of authenticity, integrity, and love. And truly, I'm going to go ahead and bridge to my biomimic self. I'm in my 50s now, and part of this process is I've learned about nature and how after 6.5 billion years of successful evolution, nature has the answers to all of our problems. It's already figured out everything, of course, from an engineering standpoint and sustainability, but also from social innovation. And nature, there are two key principles to the success of animals and plants integrating with each other, and that is diversity and cooperation. So, and we're talking radical diversity. This is the wrong number, but I'm just going to make it up. It's something like this. There's something like 5,000 different species of honeybees. Oh my gracious, you know, 5,000, maybe more. And the reason
of honeybee,
of just honeybees on the, you know, you think, well, why, you know, why did nature do it that way? But, you know, something changes in the external world and suddenly there's some sort of fungus or some sort of temperature change where one species doesn't do well. One part of that, you know, one sector of that bee family starts to fail and the other one actually grows into it. So you can see how the holistic survival really of any sort of planet or species or individual has to do with its relationship within a diverse ecosystem. So how does that tie back to the human? It means you got to show up as you are. And, you know, diversity is not served unless your unique perspective is there. And if it's okay, I want to stop and hear what you have to say about that. And then I have a story that really brings this home, which is funny, a funny story.
I want to hear the story. But just while it's in my head, can I ask a question around? So everything you said, I love. I'm sold. So I'm bought into that. 100%.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking
mm-hmm.
is for people that are listening,
mm-hmm.
that are thinking they're sold like me, and they're like, yes, I want to be authentic. I want to buy into myself. I want to show up as me.
Yeah.
How do they start that? What's the big, you know, is there a process where we dig deep to really think, are we showing up as ourselves? Do we get a bit mm-hmm. of paper? I guess the best thing would be speak to you. But initially, what is the process to kind of dig away and see, are we showing up authentically?
Such a good question. You know, thankfully today, there are so many podcasts and books with access to those that have journeyed through and definitely have guidance. But I'm going to give one particular, really distinctive tip or process. And earlier in my introduction of the bio that you were reading, you mentioned shed the old, awaken the imaginal, and fly free. So again, to that biomimic, that is the life cycle of a monarch butterfly. And this is really the most extraordinary animal potentially on the planet. When you think about it's born with all of these little legs and this incredible appetite, it's sort of like a human. It just consumes and consumes, and it's very busy with kind of managing its appetite for milkweed. You know, I actually raised them in my backyard here in San Diego. And
that's incredible.
I love it. And I panic because they'll eat a whole milkweed in a day. If I have like 10 that have birthed, I'm running off to the organic farm, getting another one, because this is their process. But here's what they do is they get to a certain point, like a developmental cycle, kind of like we humans will get to, you know, maybe more in the adult cycle, maybe like, you know, 18 or like 25 or 32 or 42. We're at these developmental cycles. And with the monarch caterpillar, it starts to recognize it's time to shed a skin. It's time for me to actually form into a different size or aspect of self. So they get super still. And they go to a place that they feel is safe enough, but this is a very vulnerable time for them. They wait a day and then they shed a skin and then they wait again. So here's this stillness with the shedding and then stillness. And then they go back and they consume again until they ultimately get to, you know, the full chrysalis. And that is like, that kind of happens. It can happen to people. I had my chrysalis moment at the age of 36. Where I was completely different. I went from legged to winged and then continued to kind of go through shifts and changes. The big metamorphosis, the chrysalis moment, can be a car accident, a divorce, a change in a job, a health concern. It can be something that just stops you in your tracks. So here's how it comes back to your question, thinking through the monarch as a metaphor. Anything that happens to you that is painful, that puts you into a vulnerable position, that makes you feel particularly triggered or upset, lean into that, because that's your guidance system for where you can grow and get closer to love, closer to what's true, closer to what's real. And the way to do that is somewhat like what the monarch just did. So you get still with the heat of the pain of change. So I call it antagonistic mentoring. It's like something's just happened to you. Like I had this one time, this gentleman who was a CEO candidate. I was doing a search for a CEO for a hospital. And this particular individual was one of six candidates that I was representing. He was particularly concerned about ageism. He was close to 60. And his mind, even though he was a millionaire and a lawyer and successful with a long career, his mind was going to, you're no good. You're going to be cast out. Nobody wants you anymore. And as I guided him, I said, this particular hospital system is interested in you for all of your experience. Well, long story short, he went to the interview and he was very defensive. And I would say even offensive, because he became particularly sort of paranoid, right? So when I did gently have to let him know that he wasn't selected to go to the final stage, he turned on me and he became aggressive. He threatened me and my business. He said that he would sue me and the hospital, because his mind just went into that paranoid sort of schizoid range. And I spent about 3 days flop sweat, heart beating, feeling like I had really blown it and everything was over. And then I remembered my practice of antagonistic mentoring. And here's what happened. It starts with saying, oh, this isn't a mentor. This is an antagonistic mentor. I'm about to shed a skin. This is why I'm shaking. So I sat there in this vulnerable state and I allowed all of the feelings to take me over. I felt scared. I felt betrayed. I had all these feelings of shame, just overwhelm. I mean, and shaking, my body was responsive. Okay. So I sit there with that and the process, like the caterpillar, let it do its work to shed the skin. So I had to feel it until it sort of peaks. And I recognized I'm starting to now kind of go back to the beginning. So I've actually felt it. Then I took a deep breath in and out. And then I said, okay, I am now open to the guidance. Now, this is a critical step, Paul, because what you have to do is after you allow, most people will push away the pain, go distract, maybe eat, 10 brownies if you're like me in the past, or cry and just like, crying is actually good, but, distract. So feel it. And then you have to say, all right, teacher of this moment, I am open. And you don't know what you're going to hear. Now, so sometimes that openness and that guidance, that request and that openness, it can take days or months. In this case, I knew instantly because I heard the lesson. And the lesson from this gentleman was, you are now with the big boys. You are doing CEO searches. You need to pull back more into your masculine. You have to have that professional buffer. You are too trusting and kind of too soft for this part of recruiting. Mm-hmm. And Paul, I breathed and I said, thank you to this gentleman. And my mind went, and all of the fear, everything fell away. And if you could picture me as the caterpillar, I was bigger now.
It's almost that you've used his bluster, learning, as an opportunity to grow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's almost taken away the fire and turning it into
alchemy.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely feel deep down that when he blustered and said what he had to say, I'm sure deep down he must have known that this is work that I need to do. I don't know that, but it's just a hunch. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So when you go through that process, is that meditation that you're doing?
It is. I would say it's mindfulness, because I don't have to sit. And when I think of meditation, and I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm a very, very mindful person. And I have to say I've very much struggled with meditation. Mm. And I think meditation for me, the way it's been taught about breathing, closing your eyes, feeling your toes, feeling your knees, feeling your hips, trying to get out of your mind. I found that very distracting and also limiting in an aspirational sense. So what I do now instead, when I'm actually going to meditate, is lately I've got these beads that I have, and I do the Sata Nama, which is Sanskrit for birth, life, death, and renewal. Sata Nama. And you do your fingers, Sata Nama, Sata Nama. And you do it as many times around the beads. I think the beads are something like, it's a sacred number. It's like 87 or something. And you close your eyes and you can feel the beads. And what's happening there is that the small ego, the id, as Freud or Jung would talk about it. The small ego now needs to take a back seat to a beautiful, aspirational, heart, almost spiritual message that there is renewal in life, that we don't have to be afraid of death, because that Sata Nama again is birth, life, death, renewal. Come back. And we can see it in the natural world. Anything that passes away out there now becomes the soil, which feeds the plants and thereby feeds the animals, round and round. So that's my process. And then I'll open my eyes and I'll look to nature and to the breeze or to the clouds. And I just open again to the guidance. And so that's how I do meditation. But in this case, doing antagonistic mentoring, it's like you're sitting in front of a mentor. So imagine that you're with like a partner, maybe, a husband, a wife, a boss, a friend, and all of a sudden you're being assaulted verbally, and you can trigger and you can actually hit back, and really at that time, if it's really an assault and you feel all your triggers, you're going to have to exit that so that you can breathe and find your own space to kind of deal like I did with that gentleman, But when the time comes to realize that this person is a teacher, that they are part of the curriculum of you shedding all these old coping mechanisms, this teacher said, girl, I love you, you know, being soft. You were really there for me. But, you know, if you want to play with us lawyers who are millionaires, you better bring up your masculine a little more. And so he is now one of about 12 people, I would say, emotionally assaulted me. And it felt like it was really scary that have helped me grow into a resilient woman today. Yeah. And I'm grateful for them.
Yeah, I'm just smiling because I can imagine, obviously, I don't want you to be verbally assaulted, but I can imagine you kind of like, I know, sort of, you know, let them get out of their system, but I can imagine you kind of smiling on the inside. I'm going to have a massive learning here. I'm going to be so like, it's almost, ooh, I've got this ability because I know something coming here. There's a lot, because most of us don't take that. Most of us will just be totally demoralized from a verbal assault from anybody. So it's lovely to know that there are tools that we can use to actually use that as an opportunity.
Absolutely. You just gave me chills across the crown of my head and down, because the truth is, at this point, age 58, when something's happening, if it's a person or my career just kind of halts for a moment, or I sprain an ankle, like I last month, I sprained my ankle and 2 days later, I popped a rib. So those were both also antagonistic mentors. Yeah. And when I opened to the guidance was, I really want you to understand that you need to be still right now. You are a woman of action and I need to halt you. Yeah. This is sort of spiritual universal, but get still and quiet down. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. It was my left ankle, my right rib. So, you know, ankles and feet, you know, and knees represent moving forward, you know, my right rib too. That was sort of like the analytical masculine side. And so that was sort of a crack. And it was, so anything that happens to me, I do smile sometimes outwardly, but certainly inwardly. I'm like, okay, master, you know, teacher, here I go. I'm ready.
So antagonistic mentor. So I love that analogy.
Yeah.
So it's almost, well, you're calling it better than me, but it's, I guess you framed how it works and what it does. But I love that analogy. How did you come up with that?
Brilliant. Yes, I follow Michael Mead. He is a mythologist and podcaster in the area of myth. He's so wonderful to listen to because he brings all these ancient myths, even the word like apocalypse. He helps us understand that apocalypse is really the idea of something breaking away so something new and beautiful comes. That's the origin of the word. You know, our language is based in something that was actually much more connected to the whole human, you know, original words and language, and especially like Japanese, which are pictographs. You know, language is just so important. And so he brings these ancient myths which touch into human archetypes. And he brings it forward. And so I listened to his and all of his stories. And he said that he was going to be in Santa Monica for a live seminar. And so I went and I invited a girlfriend and we're watching. And he said, folks, it's very, very important this day and age that if you are in the elder age group, kind of 50 and above. And he said, and I don't mean older. We can grow older or we can grow into elders. So if you are working on being an elder and collecting your wisdom and living into your traumas so that you can know what love is too, like you're working on your issues and you're an elder now, that mentorship is extremely important for the youth who are the ones that are the aspirational beings that are coming right into this current era and be there for each other. This is critical. Well, as he said that, a young woman in the back of the room raised her hand. He called on her and she said, I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Had a horrible experience. And in a nutshell, she was finishing college and she had asked one of her favorite professors to mentor her in her writing. And when she started in office hours with him and she felt like she was the luckiest girl on the planet, this was positive mentoring, right? At first, he became competitive and he was gaslighting her. It was a dramatic experience emotionally. So she not only quit that mentoring, but she also quit writing. It ruined it for her. And she said, so I don't know. And so Michael Mead said back, okay, well, let me ask you this. What are you doing now? And she said, well, I work at a local theater company. And my job really is to work with the writers and work with the stage. And we help bring these stories to life. And he said, let me ask you, do you like what you're doing? She said, I love what I'm doing. And he said, should we give a thank you note to your professor? And she said, oh my gosh, And he said, people, I want you to understand that the antagonistic mentors are more powerful and get you moving on your path much faster and a much more kind of immediate way that kind of thrusts you forward and cracks you open than a regular mentor. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So it begs another question from me. So if somebody's got an antagonistic mentor, it's like, how do we know? Is it something that, should our actions be organic? Or do we have to be in tune with the cues that are getting fed via an antagonistic mentor?
Good question. So in that case, with a young woman, she kind of unconsciously worked with that antagonistic mentor and found herself in a vibrant career.
Okay.
Had she heard this podcast, let's say, before this instance, and had she decided to practice this, as it was going on, maybe after her third session and coming home and crying and having headaches and sleeplessness, she may have said, hold it. And then she would have consciously felt betrayal and, you know, distrust and sadness and anger. And she would have had a conscious experience. So the neat thing is that the truth is, like, we are experiencing these things organically in life. But sometimes too, if we don't recognize that it's happening, we might actually circle back and never kind of learn the skill and advance into more of a conscious state of mastery in life.
Yeah.
So this is what's nice when it comes together. But she actually did. So she could have said, I hate this and I'm quitting. And then she could have said, well, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm not going to look at anything else aspirational. And I'm just going to kind of do just this. I'm going to work for my, I don't know if this is true, if she said, but I'm going to work for my father in the home business of plumbing, even though I hate it because I can't do anything artistic. Like, you know, she could have in a way kind of gone backwards, which still, how could I judge though? Maybe that would have actually been a good thing. Mm-hmm. But there's a way that sometimes we get this gift of the antagonistic mentor and we ignore it and we don't feel the feelings and we just kind of keep cycling back because the lesson needs to be learned.
Yeah.
You know, and we all could think of that in our own lives.
Absolutely. And I think there's so many, I'm sure there's people listening to this thinking about their own, because we've all had difficult moments, difficult situations. And I like the idea that you provided where we actually can take control of these situations and we can really do our own mindfulness so we can really extract the power, the opportunity that exists in those difficult moments. Because definitely it's easier to speak for me than others, but definitely encountered moments where I haven't had the tools that you've described or the equipment to really process that and really take away the learning and the opportunity. And the question that I was going to ask, and I think you've kind of covered this, but it'd be lovely to get your thoughts on this around shedding skin, because I was just thinking around, if we don't have these tools to be able to recognize those difficult moments, I think about the idea of not shedding skin and having layers and layers of kind of like an old version of us which has expired, that we just really we're not aware of it.
Yeah,
we might have that intuition that things don't feel right, but we've got no understanding about how we can sort of lean away from that into our present and future self. I don't know what your thoughts are around that.
Oh yes, you know, when I think again of a nature metaphor, think of the snake. You know, snakes, in order to shed a skin to grow, they will rub themselves against a sharp rock to create a wound. So they need the wound to split the skin. They have to have the wound. So you can see the wounds are the split that allow for the shed. Okay. Mm-hmm. So first you're recognizing my wounds are critical for the advancement of my whole self, my psyche, my spirit, my soul, my aspirations. So the snake will self-wound. Now keep in mind, when the skin comes off of the snake, it comes and wriggles it off over its head. So the eye slits move up and the snake is temporarily blind. So you can see the vulnerability. Now let's imagine that this snake though never self-wounds and does not shed the skin and go through that vulnerable state of not seeing and being blind temporarily. What'll happen is the skin will choke off, or the snake will choke off and die. It must grow. It's growing inside the skin. It's going to rip or pull. It's going to try. It's got to get that skin to rip. It's got to get rid of that skin. If it doesn't grow, it's going to choke off and die. It will not live. And so for us as humans, we can think about people we know. Like there's someone in my life who so many opportunities, was given many opportunities to see the situation, the antagonistic mentors, to lean into that fire, to alchemize change, to feel, to let that wound, that split, remove that layer. And this particular person refused to do it and grasped on to the skin and to the body the way it was and to the psyche the way it was, and has actually gone into drinking alcohol to the point of alcoholism as a way now to numb the ache, to numb the wound, to numb anything that's the fire that's bringing, to almost like douse it.
Yeah.
This person who's close to me, who I know, who's suffering with this still to this day, does admit that the alcohol actually helps them quiet their ego and drop into a place of feeling. And as I talked about antagonistic mentoring, you're giving way to your feelings. You're like, yeah, I feel awful and scared and worthless and shameful and I'm embarrassed and I'm, you know. And so the feeling life is at the center of human potential. Without feelings, we're just a computer, a robot, you know, or something else. It's the feeling and the resilient heart that senses in to attraction, intuition, creativity, aspirational. It's so we've got to have this heart, this resilient heart that says and pings that, right? And it talks to the brain and it makes us whole, like in a figure eight.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's fascinating. So, and I know that you, the last time we spoke, I think you spoke about the intelligent heart. I think it was the intelligent heart, was that?
Yes.
So, potentially, maybe you can expand on the intelligent heart, what that means, and how we can use that.
Yes. The heart as sovereign. So, in my work, you know, the reason I chose careers and this particular channel is that it is filled with so much trauma. Anytime people are between work, they feel worthless, cast out. And what I realized is that they were going forward, to use this channel as an example, they're going forward to like interviews, interviewing from their ego mind, which says, oh, you better be like that person that the internet told you need to be like.
And
a complete costume, and you better perform because, you know, you're a loser if you don't perform well. And so the ego is really there in a constant state of judgment. Now, the interesting thing from a psychology perspective is that the brain has been wired for the ego to actually look across any sort of new situation and pick out what's wrong with it, to pick out all the dangers. Mm-hmm. That's survival. So, yay. Okay. We understand that. So we're not completely throwing out the ego. What we want is a beautiful union. And this isn't this the word of the times? We want to collect up all of the fragments, everything that's been sharded and fragmented away and broken out of fear, and bring back again, you know, complete diversity, integration, and collaboration. That first union is the union of the heart with the mind. So many of us are separated. We're born, depending on your gender at birth. If you are born a man, you're told, all right, you better not show any compassion because you'll be kicked out of the man group. You know, any sensitivity, compassion, nope. Vulnerability, any of that. Women, you know, you're allowed to feel, but we're going to shame you when you feel in the workplace because then you're not masculine and you can't take on business and be a leader. So either way, the heart is really not invited. There is no union. There's a separation that's going on. And that is hell on earth. When we are living with our hearts completely separated and almost just like gone anemic, and we're no longer able to actively express ourselves and find out what these feelings are even telling us. Like, do I feel drawn to the situation or repelled? And what does that mean? And what is this antagonistic mentor situation? What is this heat? What is it telling me? So what I teach people is, hey, imagine that the car is your journey in a job interview. And in that whole process, typically the ego's behind the wheel and the heart's left at home. It's not even invited. So in this case, we're going to say heart is in the car and it's behind the wheel. The ego is in the front passenger seat with the GPS open on the phone, sharing coordinates as it should. So it's going to say, hey, danger, danger, we're on our way to the interview and you know, there's traffic. So go this way. Well, thank you, ego. You know, thank you for the coordinates. But the heart is the one that's going to feel through any sort of advice or direction. And the heart in that case, you know, in this little analogy might say, you know, rather than go out of our way about an hour and drive into those side streets, let's just sit here and have a sandwich. Let's make sure that we're nourished and we'll just wait for that little detour, you know, so the heart might override. Well, in the case of an interview or day-to-day life, people build trust and attraction out of somebody that is heart resilient and authentically showing gratitude, interest, curiosity, and they're showing up as they are.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Leave them there. So the heart, is that given us almost the permission to show up as ourselves and leave the ego at home? Because we can feel the ego, and I guess we know when our ego is present.
The ego in union with, still in the car.
Okay.
But I will tell you, when mind intelligence bows to heart intelligence, then life harmonizes. You can imagine if you lead from the ego, then you're in the interviewing standpoint again, the ego's like, don't interview. You're going to get rejected again. That's what the ego's like saying the night before. And the resilient heart, or the heart, the curious heart said, I really want to make this career move from this particular job to this particular career path. And the only way it's going to work is if I try and go for it. So there's the courage.
Okay.
Right. And so the heart leads.
Yeah. I love your analogies, by the way, because it really brings it home. It kind of crystallizes it. I'm sure, certainly for me, and I'm sure everybody listening and watching, that they will get that. And it's really valuable and powerful as well, because if anyone's like me, you don't really think about, we're aware of the ego, we're aware of the heart, but we don't realize how they can work against us when we need them most. And we have these tools, and we can use these to kind of really show up as our authentic self, which will be natural. And I think, I don't know what your opinion is, but I think that people, when they feel and sense we're being authentic, I think it, even somebody that's, I'm not an expert, this is your field, but I'm even sure as a interviewer, they probably become more relaxed because they can feel the right energy. Even if you're not the best person for the job, even if you are, it doesn't really matter. But if we show up as ourselves, I'm sure the interviewer will think, well, Paul, great, maybe not great for this job, but he might remember me in 6 months time when something does come up, and he thinks, actually, that guy that came in 6 months ago, let's see if he's still available. Let's reach out to him.
Absolutely. Great. Because it's, I tell people interviewing is actually not a performance. That's a huge, not even a lie. I would just say it just feels to me, it hurts humans. And it's just something that our society has built up, that everything is a performance and you're not good enough.
Yeah.
And that's just part of patriarchy, you know, in a way. And what I tell people, the truth is, in a union situation where you have heart and mind together in a partnership, then your interview is a service. And you're saying, how can I help you know me? And that means that in any case, that interviewer on the other side can actually even be kind of unskilled at what they're doing. So maybe they have a funny kind of tone of voice. Like, I have this one client and she can't help it, but when she asks a question, she always sounds kind of funny, like a little bit like Kim Kardashian. So she kind of says something like, so Paul, tell me, why are you interested in this job? Okay. So with that tone of voice, if your ego was in the lead, right away, you'd be going, ooh, okay, what's wrong with the job or me or you? And so now the ego's created separation. And you might even lose your train of thought. You might now no longer be able to convey who you are or create trust. But when the heart's in the lead and you hear that tone of voice, which really didn't mean what it sounded like, then the heart says, ooh, interesting. Okay, I got to lean in and help her. And then you lean in and you say, sure, let me tell you. Completely different.
Yeah. 100%. So I've just got a thought just come into my head, and then I want to find out a little bit more about career ecology. So
so
when people, because I think from a lot of perspectives, and even I would use psych myself as an example, I think sometimes when we go to interviews, we put on a performance, and that performance, it isn't us really. It's a performance to try and get the job. to do that.
Yeah. Shouldn't be that way, but yeah.
And it's so when we do that and we get the job, it's almost the recruiter or the employer are hiring that person who's just showed up for the job. So when Paul turns up on Monday, I want that guy that's just turned up for the job. That's not me. I just did that for that last hour, but that's not me. And so the recruiter's probably thinking, Paul, totally different from the interview. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably thinking that everybody feels uncomfortable because I'm shown up as me, and that might be cool, but not for this job. So maybe you can expand on that if you've got any thoughts around that.
Oh my gosh. Yes, that happens all the time. You know, when I'm speaking and training people on mindful interviewing, at the end, I almost always have a few people that come up to me that are extreme introverts, and they are almost crying, and they'll mm-hmm. say, my parents told me, and my professors and everyone told me that I need to be the captain or the president of all these clubs, that I need to really be out in front. And that's the last place I want to be. As the introvert, I like to be the observer. And then I like to come back with feedback the next day after I have deeply thought it through. And I said, we need you. I said, do you know how many companies need that analytic, that thoughtful, even risk manager potential, you know, viewpoint? I said, so be as you are, and that organization that's looking for that skill set will grab you and keep you, and you will grow in your role into your greatest potential. And I'll tell you, and I say that to people at the end of these trainings, they burst out crying, especially the younger they are, because to be told as you're growing up to be something that you're not is the definition of trauma, according to Gabor Mate. Trauma is any time that you are unable to show up authentically as yourself in the moment. And so especially in America, everything is everybody's an optimist and an extrovert and basically John Wayne or, you know, Ronald Reagan or something like that. And, you know, truly we need every single temperament. So something that's fun to do is find out what is your base temperament based on Hippocrates, who was considered the first Western doctor. Of course, he doesn't go back to like Vedic times and all the true beginning of medicine. But there's a test called something like Psychometrics for Temperaments. You could Google that, Psychometrics for Temperaments. And I can actually give you the link for the show notes.
Okay, lovely.
Yeah, and you find out, are you an extrovert or an introvert? And then there's two different extroverts, two different introverts. So I bring this up in relation to your question, because people might show up pretending to be this extrovert, and then they come in and they're not capable maybe of managing or mentoring their own onboarding. And maybe that was particularly expected in this role or the way they came across, and they just get lost. So it's almost like a failure to launch or to integrate. Failure to launch is a big thing right now for young, you know, kids coming out of college. Yeah. There's that term, but it's very similar. Failure to integrate into the job and to actually seed in and root in and join the ecosystem. So it's very, it happens all the time. I see it. And that's why it's best when you, and what I teach is a threefold path for searching, because if you're only going for one path that you think requires you to be a certain way, if you open up to three, then you have permission to be your authentic self, because you're collaborating now with chance. You have a greater opportunity for success. Mm-hmm. And these different options are slightly different. You know, one is status quo, like, oh, you know, I know I can get hired off of this from my resume. The second one is a little bit divergent, maybe just in that sort of career area, but just a different division. And maybe the third one is out of the box, you know, like, I used to be a pharmacist and now I want to be a librarian. So, you know, and it can be done. And in fact, I've helped many people do things like that. They do it. I'm the Sherpa. I simply open them up to authenticity and they climb the mountain. And I've just got the water bottle.
Massive, though. Because I think to give people that chink of light or chink of clarity, that actually whatever your intuition is telling you, that is there for you. And you should listen to that, because it's very easy to, for whatever reason, to find ourselves in a career or in a situation that really doesn't serve us. We kind of know that deep down.
Yeah.
And sometimes we've got that compound behavior of doing something consistently, or there's fear, or there's expectation. So yeah. I love the fact that you're shedding so much light, clarity on the fact that we all have the ability to really lean into what really serves us and really where our heart's at and really what's going to give us that, where we're going to show up at, to show up as ourselves.
Yes. The trauma is healed. I mean, it's just, it's so, that is the trauma. And, you know, Gabor Mate talks about, he said, as a child, most children somewhat do experience the trauma. We all do as humans from, you know, our parents, they're humans too. So we're traumatized one way or another in different, you know, sometimes not so much and sometimes horribly so. But as children, we really don't have control and power. So we have to give up our authentic self in any moment sometimes to just be quiet, sit back, do your homework, or, you know, listen to mom and dad and learn how the way the world is or be responsible or whatever. And we're learning how to be in a world with demands. So we can't truly be this wild child or this super, super quiet child. I mean, you know, even Einstein didn't talk for 5 years. And I don't know if his experience was that he was told that he would never succeed unless he talked. I have a feeling he was not told that because, you know, obviously he was an incredible dreamer, you know, incredibly brilliant. And those 5 years were essential for his chrysalis time, for him to incubate his thoughts, for him to observe the world. But, you know, one way or another, we are traumatized as a child when we cannot be authentic. So we have to know that when we get to about age 25, consciously say, all right, of course I've got coping mechanisms. Of course I was a child. I could not be authentic at many different points. From society and from my family. So I'm going to actively work on this now. And if you cannot afford a therapist, then read Gabor Mate's book, come through my Way of the Monarch online, you know, journey that's 4 months long. Yeah. Find something that you could try yourself and see if it hits and unlocks something first on your own. Because if you are here listening and you want this, you're actually way over the line of already receiving and listening to those truths that will unlock in you and that you get to practice and try, and you'll be on your way. You may not even need to pay thousands and thousands of dollars.
It almost seems illogical to me that the world needs to see our authentic self, not a version of something else. So it's almost like from a curiosity perspective, it's like, well, I wonder how I would function as my authentic self, given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make sense for anybody to navigate through this world and for all the various interactions that we're going to have if we can't show up as our authentic selves. And so to me, it's a no-brainer. And I think everybody is entitled and deserves to really represent themselves and not like a really watered down version of something else. It's almost we show up as imposters.
That person's already there, you know, so you don't need to try to be them. And, you know, not only is it a birthright, like you said, but you know what? I honestly think it's essential for the success for just the life on this planet. We just had a huge dramatic change with AI. And I know this dates a little bit because I don't know when this will actually, you know, air. Mm-hmm. But this last weekend, we saw Sam Altman was fired as the CEO of ChatGPT at OpenAI and then hired by Microsoft. That change right there potentially could move AI without any of its guardrails very quickly into humanity. Mm-hmm. There, and even, you know, social media and cell phones has changed the social landscape, and we are social beings. So this is the time more than ever to anchor in your taproot and roots into your authentic self, to make sure you've got that foundation as the rest of it starts to now get very different and swirl around. You've got to have that taproot going on right now.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. Because our uniqueness is essential. The world needs our uniqueness. It doesn't need a watered down version of something else that doesn't represent us.
Diversity and cooperation right there.
Yeah, absolutely. So career ecology, I'm dying to hear about career ecology. So how did you come up with the name career ecology and how was it birthed? Where did it all happen?
You know, an antagonistic mentor situation, I would say, antagonistic mentor. Okay, it really did because, you know, recruiting, IG Medical is the name of my recruiting firm. And that was birthed out of that 36 where the Twin Towers fell. I was 8 months pregnant and was birthed my child on the spot. Then I was laid off. And then I had this autoimmune catastrophic event. And my husband and I had to sell our home overnight, live with my parents for 3 months. That's what thrust me into wanting to practice radical kindness. So boom, I go into recruiting and I find out that recruiting is a sales business and they're keeping me to 8 minute conversations where I need an hour to talk to this person who is on the edge of catastrophic depression, potentially divorce because of all their feelings for being out of work for a year, you know, whatever. And I said, okay, this is not for me. I need to start my own agency. So that happened in 2005. Fast forward to 2016. And if you live in America, you know what that is. That is when everything broke loose in terms of social chaos, when we, our country, elected a president who is over the moon, narcissistic and dangerous. And so what I started to notice, so remember my first moving into recruitment was 9/11. So that was a cracking open of the social and human dynamic with that. And I felt a flood of compassion and love, wanting to know where that trauma, what was the heart of that trauma that made this, that brought us and these people to this place to create this event? And then what brought us to the event that we would actually nominate a president like that? And the first initial days were just so aggressive and it was so hard for me. And so what it was an antagonistic mentor moment. So this man continues to be an antagonistic mentor in my life to show me the extent of the disconnect from the heart and what happens when you have somebody that shows up as predator and those that have that are so disconnected from their own authentic selves that they align underneath the predator because they don't want to be preyed upon, or society, you know, kind of shows them that you need to align with the strong man in the room or something like that. And so I was restless and I said, I've got to open up a huge part of my day, a huge part of my psyche and life and creativity towards authentic relating and bringing people into their fullness and holistic self. And that's really, was really that election that birthed it. And I went away for 3 days and I sat in nature and I looked at the trees and I began the process. And I had a lot of failures in that because I was like, is it this? Is it this? How do I meet people? How do I find people? And it's finally now in this year become the masterclass for job seekers and authentic relating at every touch point.
And those failures are opportunities because we can't grow without learnings. And the learnings invariably come from the setbacks. The setbacks are really the bedrock of our businesses and our opportunities. So, and that's why you're able to give an exquisite service to your clients because of the setbacks that happened. And yeah, so it's part of the process. So the masterclass. So maybe you can give us a little bit more detail of what that looks like and how you're working with clients in relation to that.
Yes. Well, you remember probably during COVID, everybody's like, ooh, masterclasses. You know, there's a wonderful masterclass organization that brings masters. You know, it can be Christina Aguilera, how to hit those high whistle notes, you know, or it can be a chef or a movie producer, all sorts of things, a poet. And I thought, you know, when you have an opportunity, in my case, 20 years, and if you add the years before that leading, 20 years of in my own business, listening and deeply trying to serve humans, you know, in these crunchy places, like hearing the debriefs between the client, the candidate, and really finding the pain points, I knew that I had some mastery now, some knowledge, a unique place that most people don't have. Even a lot of other independent recruiters don't actually approach it with the depth I do. You know, they're still just, oh, let's do some matching, you know, but I'm going down into the pain point, you know, all of that. So I thought, this is a beautiful place to draw people into this healing moment towards wholeness. And at first, I just kind of put out mindful interviewing, the responsive resume, dynamic search, and activated networking. And I put it out there as modules. And it kind of fell underneath career coaching. And it still brought with it a different sense. People like, do I need a coach? It's still a little bit of like, I'm giving away my power potentially because I need somebody to help me. Like, I need a coach. And there's so many. I've been with coaches. I've been with therapists. I'm so grateful for all of them. But in this case, I found that my role wasn't to serve there. It was to serve more as like a Sherpa or a doula to say, here's the mastery. Here are the tools. Here's how you show up in an interview authentic. Here's how the practical works and the poetic, the heart and the mind. Come through, be responsible for climbing that mountain, but I am going to bring you that compass, that cup of water, you know, or whole bottle of water, and that cookie and that whatever you need so that you can actually get to that high place of that apex and you can realize you did this and then you are ready for the rest of your life. So it's this process that is open for a year for anyone, but some are like, I'm in it, you know, and they're done in a month and off they go. And others are using it as a longer process of that shedding, awakening the imaginal and growing. So they may take longer with the resume process, which is like resume yoga. But it's this combination of, why not use this desperate place to gather yourself up and to be all alive and fully empowered in the world? It's the perfect place and time.
Yeah, no, I love the idea, the premise behind everything that you've said, particularly what you're doing with career ecology, because I guess we've all observed it. I always think about when you jump on London Underground in the morning, rush hour, and you how many people look full of the joys about going to work and going about their business. There will be some, but there's an awful lot, I think, where it's where they're really thinking about 5:30, 6 p.m. Yeah. Getting home. How quickly can they get home? Or what are they going for dinner that evening? Definitely, there's a reasonable proportion of people that fit that group, and I think the group that unfortunately that are really energized about their day ahead, I think that's quite small. And I'm just excited by the fact that we can use these different skills and tools that you've spoken about today to really be open to really being authentic, being more mindful about where am I at now in my life? Does what I do now, does it really serve the person I am now? To really look at it and look at it as an opportunity and to really not be fearful of it. Because I think sometimes as well, I wrote down a word here, confidence. And I think sometimes when we've been doing something for a long period of time, our confidence goes. Even if we've been successful in a job, like you cited the guy that was going for the CEO role, he's wealthy already, millionaire. So from a career perspective, this guy's done great things. But I think that when you go back into the job market and somebody else ultimately can make a decision whether you get the job or you don't, your confidence isn't quite there. So I like the idea of us being able to be more confident about seeking our authenticity. So just around that, what's your advice for people listening to this that it really resonates and they're thinking about their own situation, but maybe they're thinking, they might be thinking, I'm not that confident about being able to extract myself from what I'm doing now, even though I sense that this isn't where I want to be now. Yeah. Do you have any advice around confidence?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked that because, you know, and again, to the shed the old, awaken the imaginal and fly free, a lot of us just want to fly, right? We're just like, just want to be flying. I want to be happy at work. Or if I'm not happy here, I want to get the next job and just be happy there. And I say to people, you know, without that introspection, without that interior view and that interior relationship to self, you can't truly fly. There has to be that imaginal opening and awakening where you connect with that external person or company where you do great things together. And there's a vibration, you know, there's an energy. And you can't even get to the imaginal self unless you have shed coping mechanisms. So really my advice is that empowerment, that confidence comes through that life cycle of the monarch. So begin with what is it in me? Like, I want to have that internal. I want to know what are the antagonistic mentors in my life? Am I focused on self-care? Do I touch into what I'm curious about? Are my emotions available to me? That's that whole first realm, which I take people through in Way of the Monarch, is that whole shedding. It's almost like we're in the desert. We have to really show up for ourselves, be in that place with limited resources. You've got to feel the heat to alchemize. And then from there, we go into this chrysalis, and we go from there into this kind of lion-heartedness, and we go into this wolfy stuff, which is all about boundary communication and how to do that well. And then after that, we come into pollination, where you get to give your gifts and receive back. So it really starts all the way in that heat, that heat of alchemy.
Yeah. You know? I love the process, and I it sounds very thorough in terms of really we're going to approach this with open eyes and really maximize the opportunity to really find ourselves and live life on our terms, as opposed to maybe just existing. I think to a certain extent that can definitely happen. So in terms of people finding out more and contacting you, what's the best way for people to find out about the masterclass and contact yourself?
Yes. They can come on over to Career Ecology, but I'm also creating a special page for the listeners today.
Oh, amazing.
That's going to be fun. And I'm going to give it to you for your notes, but it'll be Career Ecology. So www.careerecology, those two regular words together, no dots. So careerecology.com/MPF, which is my perfect failure. Okay. So MPF. And so I'll give it to you for the show notes, and I'm going to have a 10% discount on the masterclass as well as Way of the Monarch and any piece that people feel that they might want to sample or try. And Way of the Monarch is actually free through the first chapter, all the way through the antagonistic mentoring guidance. Mm-hmm. So anybody can drop in and see what that feels like.
Amazing. Amazing. Very generous and really excited about what you're doing. The fact that we've had this amazing conversation today, and I think equally, I just think what you're doing is so important. It kind of, I almost think, why haven't we been doing this before? Why have we got to the point that everyone is so lost? I think anybody that's listening to this or watching this, if they're really honest, do we show up as our authentic selves on a daily basis? There will be some that are fine, but I think there's a lot of us, that, including myself, definitely I've been acting a whole lot, a whole heap. Yeah. And does that serve me? No, not really. No. Although I've made friends and I've got colleagues and all this type of thing, which is great, am I totally content and happy in what I'm doing and as me, as my authentic self? And I think most of us can think about that, and it almost feels like a crime that we don't show up as our authentic self. So that's
the human condition.
I really love what you're doing.
It's the human condition is the split from authenticity. I mean, that's the human condition. You know, the Surgeon General here in the United States says that loneliness is the number one, you know, illness in America, as well as there's an epidemic right now in mental well-being because of all that split. You know, truly abandonment is when you abandon yourself. That's the first, most catastrophic experience of abandonment.
Yeah, that's demoralizing, because every day, if we're not showing up as ourselves, that's demoralizing.
Self-abandonment, right there, boom.
Yeah.
That'd be the first one to see yourself,
Okay. So we have a recurring question on the podcast, and a recurring question is, if you could invite three inspirational people for dinner, who would you invite?
So the people I chose definitely show up in the world as highly authentic. And these are people who have all passed, but I'll mention them. It is Emily Dickinson. She, you know, obviously considered herself, she's a poet, you know, of the ages. And she said, you know, I will not be a housewife. It was during a very, very tight patriarchal time right before the Civil War. She said, I will not. And she sat in her room and she gave us over 1,000 poems, which are like soul merged. There's a lot of wisdom in there to decode. So Emily Dickinson, number one. Number two, Carl Jung. Mm. And he was coming at a time when psychology was really coming in of its own as its own discipline. He was partnering with Freud, but they actually had to diverge, which was really overwhelming for Carl Jung, because he looked up to Freud, and you know, he really wanted that relationship. But he felt that this depth side, this kind of unconscious, subconscious, dream state, almost paranormal, all of this other part that we don't understand, that we kind of touch in our dreams, was critical for wholeness. And Freud, not so much. So interestingly, when Carl Jung separated from Freud, into his authentic self, yeah. followed what he was inspired, he lost a partner. So I was thinking when you were saying that before is that you might actually lose some people in your life.
Yeah.
But look what he did. He needed to shed that relationship. And my third one is Harriet Tubman. And oh, my gracious, everyone told her. So she's a woman here in America that prior to the Civil War, she bravely brought people across East Coast of the United States and ultimately into Canada. She brought enslaved African Americans across and over 600 into freedom when people were telling her, you can't do this. You know, this is too far. It's impossible. You know, this, and she just said, no, I can do anything that I believe and put my mind to. And she would connect to actually a dream state as well. And she would see pathways. She would understand, you know, if we go this way, we'll get captured and this way we'll be free. And she lived to be 91.
Wow.
And so she's, I'd want to have dinner with the three of them. Imagine.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah, that would be amazing. And they would love what you're doing as well, because I think it underpins a lot of who they were, and they 100% were existing, living as their authentic selves.
Yeah, they were.
Laurie, thank you so much. I've taken up a lot of your time, but it's hugely appreciated, because I was really looking forward to this discussion. And I think what you're doing is needed, and I just think that people, anybody that's listening to this, watching this, I think it's a huge opportunity just to kind of reflect and actually be really hopeful about moving forward as their authentic selves and really tapping into whatever the world has an offer for them, because it is available to them. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your yes. And for everyone that through chance finds themselves to this conversation, thank you for your yes too.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode of My Perfect Failure. We're always looking to grow the show, so please do share this episode far and wide, particularly if you know people that really want to tap into themselves, and maybe they're going for a career, or they're looking at a career change, or maybe even any type of life change. Please do share this episode with them. And your feedback is most welcome. So we're keen to hear about the things you like, and equally the things you don't like. You can find me at paul@myperfectfailure.com, or you can find me via the feedback page on the website. So take care for now. Bye.
Thanks for listening to My Perfect Failure podcast. Be sure to visit www.myperfectfailure.com to join the conversation. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Look out for our next episode.